Yes, anything, anywhere, anytime, with anyone. No, that's not us. That's the Goodies, but you're listening to Historical Hystericals. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Historical Hystericals. I'm Chris Brennan.
And I'm Commander Mike, and we're back from our winter hibernation.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has. I think we've got a bad habit of closing down over winter.
When it gets cold in Melbourne, we just curl up and go to sleep somewhere.
Yes. Hasten to point out with, not with each other, but we'll move on.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out, yes. Oh, dear. And but we haven't been totally idle, have we, Mike? We've been working hard on this epic, epic show that we're going to present for you today.
Absolutely, and that's one I've been looking forward to because it's part of my childhood. I remember growing up watching these guys when I race home from school.
Yeah, every day at about 4 o'clock, you'd come racing in the door, you'd plonk yourself down in front of the TV with your Vegemite toast and your Milo or whatever, and you'd watch the Goodies.
Oh, the three beauties. Oh, I love them. These guys are great.
Normally it was the Goodies and then Doctor Who for me, but, you know.
Yes.
Now, the Goodies was a British television comedy series from the 1970s and 1980s. It combines surreal sketches and situation comedies and redefined TV comedy much the same way that Benny Hill did about a decade earlier.
The show was co-written and starred Tim Brooke Taylor, Graham Garden and Bill Oddie. Together they were known as The Goodies.
Now, I've got to point out that Bill always said that on the credits it said written by Tim Brooke Taylor, Graham Garden and Bill Oddie. The only reason they put Tim in there was because Tim let them borrow his pen.
Yes. As we're looking at the group called the Goodies, it's only fair to spend time looking at each of the members and where they came from.
Oh, so, this is going to take some time.
Oh, yeah. So we'll start off with the oldest Goodie, Tim Brooke Taylor.
He'll never admit to being the oldest, but yeah.
Unfortunately, the facts bear differently. He was born on the 17th of July, 1940, in Buxton, Derbyshire, England. His mother was an international lacrosse player, and his father was a solicitor.
Now, there's a combination for you.
Mm. He was expelled from primary school at the early age of 5 and a half.
Hang on, 5 and a half?
Yeah.
What can a 5 and a half-year-old do to get expelled?
That is not on record.
I'm not surprised.
Tim was then schooled at Thornleigh Primary School, where he won a cup for his prowess as a bowler in the school cricket team. And then Winchester College, which he left with 7 O-levels and 2 A-levels in English and History. After teaching for a year at preparatory school in Berkhamsted and a term back at Holmley School as a teacher, he studied at Pembroke College at the University of Cambridge. There he read economics and politics before changing to read law and mixed with other budding comedians including John Cleese, Graham Chapman, Bill Oddie, Jonathan Lind in the prestigious Cambridge University Footlighters Club.
Now, they produced some of the greatest British comedians you've ever seen, and it was all in the law department.
Yeah, well, not all law. The others were studying other things, but they did come together under Cambridge University. And that list before, John Cleese, Graham Chapman from Monty Python, of course.
Thank you.
My brain just went froze.
Oh, it happens at your age.
Yeah. And Jonathan Lynn, who became a real powerhouse in the BBC comedy later on.
The Footlight Club review, called A Clump of Plinths, was so successful during its Edinburgh Festival Fringe run that the show was renamed as Cambridge Circus and the review transferred to the West End in London, and then later was taken to both New Zealand and to Broadway in the United States in September of 1964. Tim was also active in the Pembroke College Drama Society, known as the Pembroke Players.
Tim, in 1964, moved swiftly to the BBC Radio with a fast-paced comedy show called I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, in which he performed and co-wrote. As the screeching, eccentric Lady Constance de Colvert, he could be relied upon to generate the loudest audience response of many programs, merely with her unlikely catchphrase, "Did somebody call?" Other members of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again were John Cleese, Bill Oddie, Graham Garden, David Hatch and Joe Kendall.
Now, also in the mid-60s, Tim performed in the TV series called On the Braden Beat. Now, this took over the time slot that had been recently vacated by Peter Cook in his guise of E.L. Wistie. Tim played a reactionary right-wing city gent who believed that he was the soul of tolerance.
But he wasn't.
He wasn't. In 1967, Tim became a writer-performer on the TV series At Last, the 1948 show. This starred John Cleese, Graham Chapman and Marty Feldman. The famous Four Yorkshiremen sketch was co-written by the four writers and performers of the series. If you haven't seen the Four Yorkshiremen sketch, look it up. Have a hunt on YouTube and find it. It is hilarious.
If I can find it, I'll put it up as a link on our Facebook page.
The sketch was one of the few bits that survived the destruction of this series, with all the tapes being wiped by David Frost's Paradigm Productions. Now, they actually produced the series and then wiped everything to do with it. Well
Oops.
Done. The sketch also appeared on the DVD At Last, the 1948 show. The Four Yorkshiremen sketch has also been performed during Amnesty concert performances by the members of Monty Python, occasionally including other comedian and actors in the place of the Monty Python regulars. Notably, actually, Rowan Atkinson and Alan Rickman have done this sketch, so look it up. It is fantastic. Also, as well as being performed during Monty Python Live at the Hollywood Bowl and on the Monty Python shows, footage of Tim Brooke Taylor and John Cleese from At the Last, the 1948 show, was shown as part of the documentary special Monty Python, Almost the Truth, The Lawyer's Cut.
In 1968 and 69, Tim was also a cast member and writer for the television comedy series Marty, starring Marty Feldman. During this time, Tim also appeared as two characters in the film One Man Band, directed by Orson Welles. However, the project was never completed and remains unreleased.
Ooh, something to hunt for.
In 1968 and 1969, Tim made two series of the TV show Broaden Your Mind with Graham Garden. Bill Oddie joined the series for a second season. Now, describing itself as the Encyclopedia of the Air, this series was a string of comedy sketches often lifted from I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again, and linked loosely by a weekly running theme. Now, unfortunately, nothing but a few minutes of the film exists of this program, although homemade off-air audio recordings survived for both seasons. Its success led to the commissioning of The Goodies.
Now, this, of course, brings us back to 1970 and to the start of The Goodies. But before we do that, we'll go on to Bill Oddie. Born William Edgar Oddie, or Bill to his mates, he was born on the 7th of July, 1941, making him the second in age, not the oldest but not the youngest, in Rochdale, England. After attending Lapel Primary School, Holmeswell Grammar School, then King Edward School, Bill studied English literature at Pembroke College at the University of Cambridge. Gee, who else went there? I wonder. Where he appeared in several Cambridge University's Footlight Club productions. Ah, there it is. There's the link. Now, we've mentioned Clump of Plinths before with Tim. That's the one that was very successful and went on to London, West End, New Zealand, blah, blah, blah. Bill wrote scripts for Clump of Plinths and for TV's That Was the Week That Was. So there's a link hidden in all this. It sort of intertwines together. His first television appearance was in Bernard Braden's On the Braden Beat in 1964, the show that Tim became a regular on a little later. Subsequently, Bill was a key member of the performers in the BBC radio series, I'm sorry, I'll read that again, where many of the musical compositions were featured that were produced by him. So he was also a musician as well as a comedy writer. Some were released on the album Distinctly Oddie by Polydor Records in 1967.
He was possibly one of the first performers to parody a rock song, arranging traditional Yorkshire folk songs in the style of Joe Cocker's hit rendition of the Beatles' With a Little Help from My Friends, and singing Andy Pandy in the style of brassy soul numbers such as Wilson Pickett or Gino Washington might perform.
I've really got to do a YouTube hunt and drag some of those out.
See if I can find them and put them on the link. Yeah, I love Facebook. We can put the links up and you can follow all these.
Now, in one of the songs on I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, Bill performed What a Wonderful World with a voice fully reminiscent of Louis Armstrong. During the course of the song, the rest of the cast attributed the gravelly quality of his voice to a sore throat. So,
In the background, during the rest of the song, it was possible to hear the cast dispense cough medicine, then call for a doctor, the arrival of the doctor, and his decision that Bill should go into hospital. the trip to hospital in the ambulance, and the operation extracting his tonsils, all during the song. After this, the sound of his voice changed to sound closer to that of Harry Secombe. And he thanks the cast for curing him. On television, Bill was co-writer and performer for the comedy series Twice a Fortnight with Graham Garden, Terry Jones, Michael Palin, Jonathan Lynn. Later, he was co-writer and performer for the comedy series Broaden Your Mind with Tim and Graham, and for which Bill became a cast member for the second series. Now, that brings us to the goodies. So I think now we'll check out the early life of young Mr. Graham Garden.
Oh, he'd love to hear you call him young Mr. Graham Garden, wouldn't he?
Well, compared to the other two, he is.
He is young, yes. Graham is not his first name, though. His first name is actually David. It's David Graham Garden, and he was born on the 18th of February in 1943 in Aberdeen, Scotland. So he's not a Brit, he's a Scot. And he grew up in Preston, England. Graham was educated at the Repton School and studied medicine at the Emmanuel College in Cambridge, where he then joined the prestigious Cambridge University Footlight Club. Gee, where have we heard that before? Of which he then became president in 1964. Now, Tim was the president the year before. Graham was president in 1964. And he performed with the 1964 Footlights Revue, Stuff What Dreams Are Made Of, at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. That is really hard to say. The Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Graham qualified in medicine at King's College, London, but never actually practiced. Asked how he justified making jokes rather than saving lives, he answered, "I don't think I would have done as well. It's an interesting question whether you have contributed more to the vast store of human enjoyment by doing comedy or being a doctor. But the answer for me is that I don't think I would have been successful or as happy being a doctor."
It always worries me when they say a doctor has a practice. You'd think they'd have gotten it right by now. Graham was co-writer and performer in the classic BBC radio comedy show, I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again. Now, we've heard that name a few times already. Mm-hmm. That ran from 1965 to 1970 and then was rebirthed again in 1973. As Graham was studying medicine during the early seasons of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, and this commitment made it difficult for him to be a member of the cast during the third season because of the midwifery medical course at Plymouth. Oh, boy, he had a lot on his plate. However, he kept on sending the scripts to the show by mail. That was snail mail, not email, because they didn't have email back then. And he rejoined the cast of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again upon returning to his medical studies in London. So he's all over the country, but he's still got his heart in comedy. On several occasions, his medical qualifications were lampooned in the 25th anniversary show of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again. David Hatch asked him if he was still a writer, and Graham said, "Here's something I wrote this morning." Hatch said, "Hang on, this is a prescription." And Graham says, "Yeah, but it's a funny one."
Graham and Bill co-wrote many episodes of the television comedy series Doctor in the House, including most of the first season episodes and all of the second season episodes, as well as co-writing episodes for the subsequent Doctor at Large and Doctor in Charge series.
You never sort of think of Graham being involved in those sort of things. So I love all the Doctor series, but you never think of Graham and tie him into those, do you?
No, but actually writing it.
And
he was doing this while the Goodies was in production.
He was a hard worker, wasn't he?
Oh, they really do know hard work, these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Now, later on, Graham also wrote for Surgical Spirit in 1994. Now, Graham also presented three series for the BBC's health magazine program, Body Matters. I did see a couple of those, and they were wonderful.
So should we be referring to him as Dr. Garden?
Since he's not got a practice, we'll say no.
No, okay. Later, he was co-writer and performer in the comedy series Broaden Your Mind with Tim Brooke Taylor. Now, Bill Oddie joined the series for the second season.
I remember you saying that.
I did say that before. So now we have all three boys in the lineup for the Goodies. Let's do the Goodies.
An early title which was considered for the series was Narrow Your Mind. This was following on from the previous series of Broaden Your Mind. They also considered the title Super Chaps 3.
Oh, my God. I'm really glad they didn't go with either of those.
Now, Bill wrote the music and songs for the series, while the Goodies theme was co-written by Bill and a guy called Michael Gibbs. I'll try and find a video clip of the Goodies theme song to put up on our Facebook page as well.
Yes. Now, I've got an album somewhere around here, which is The Goodies Sing.
Yep.
Which has all the Goodies music on it, which is just brilliant to have.
Yes.
It drives people mad at parties when you put it on.
Yeah, they love the funky Gibbon, but when it gets to the third track on the album, they're like, turn it off now.
Yeah, you can turn it off now. You can go somewhere else. Yeah. Then you put on Barbie Girl or something like that. So let's talk about the basic structure of the show. Now, the series was based around the trio, Graham, Bill and Tim, always being short of money and offering themselves up for hire, with the tagline, we do anything, anytime, anywhere. We'll leave it at that. Now, they would perform all sorts of ridiculous but generally benevolent tasks. Now, under this loose pretext, the show explored all sorts of off-the-wall scenarios and comedic potential. Of course, their chosen means of transport was their three-seater bicycle, and the bike is called a Trandom. The traditional two-seater, of course, is the Tandem, but when you've got three bums on the seats, it becomes a Trandom. I always thought of it as a trike, for some reason.
A trike would be three wheels, not three seats.
Yeah, but when you've got three loose wheels on the thing, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, move on. In the episode, The Goodies and the Beanstalk, Graham announces they must sell their most valuable possession, the Trandom.
Not the Trandom.
Bill protests about selling Buttercup. Now, this joke refers to the selling of a family cow in Jack and the Beanstalk, and it's the only instance of the bike actually having a name.
Yeah, there you go. Mm. Now, wasn't there an episode where they had a set of horns on the front of the bike, like cow horns at one stage? I think there was. I'll have to look that up, but that would add into the Buttercup thing. So, yeah. I digress.
Now, there are actually three versions of a bike. There was a modified two-seater used in the first series of The Goodies and a red three-seater used for the remainder of their BBC run. The blue three-seater used for the London Weekly Times episodes in Series 9.
I think I remember the first one didn't actually have any pedals at the back, so Bill was always at the back with his feet up on pegs, I think.
Yep. And it was only the second bike that actually had them all.
Had all three pedalling, yeah.
Actually, we'll refer back to something a bit later on. I've got a story about that.
Ah.
Mm. Many episodes parodied current events, such as an episode where the entire black population of South Africa emigrates to Great Britain to escape apartheid. As this means that the white South Africans no longer have anyone to exploit or oppress, they introduce a new system called apartheid, where short people, Bill and a number of jockeys, are discriminated against.
Ah, yeah, I remember that one.
Other storylines were more abstractly philosophical, such as the episode in which the trio spend Christmas Eve together waiting for the Earth to be blown up by a prior arrangement of the world's governments. The Christmas Eve episode, titled Earth in Asia, was one of the two episodes which took place entirely in one room. The other one was The End, occurred when Graham accidentally had their offices encased in an enormous block of concrete. Now, these episodes were made when the entire location budget for the season had been spent, forcing them to come up with a script to be shot entirely on one set and relied only on character interaction. This format is known in the industry as a bottle episode.
In other words, oh my God, we've run out of money. What are we going to do? Oh, we'll just write it in a room. Yeah, that'll work. No worries.
Well, still sounds better than a clip episode. We just show clips of previous.
Don't you hate it when shows do that and you just suddenly get nothing but old clip bits? Or what seems to be a favourite these days is where they bring in shots of the warm-up comedians from before, and they just show the warm-up comedians for an entire episode. And you think, oh, you really are stretching at the moment, aren't you? Anyway, Kit and Kong, Episode 7, Season 2, is the only Goodies episode that's officially missing from the BBC archives. It's gone. Poof. But, however, there is an expanded, more elaborate version of the episode called Kit and Kong Montreux, 72 edition, especially made for the 1972 Montreux Festival. Now, that does exist and is said to have had only a few minor differences between that and the 1971 version. So, did they go back and reshoot the whole thing for 1972, or...?
Pretty much, yep.
Oh, that's a huge effort. The Goodies won the Silver Rose in 1972 for their special episode at the Festival Rose de Jour, held at Montreux, Switzerland. And in the first episode of the next series, The New Office, Tim can be seen painting the trophy gold.
Yep, win silver and paint it gold. I like that.
That really makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Now, the Goodies also won the Silver Rose in 1975, the Festival Rose d'Or, for their episode The Movies. Now, this is my favourite Goodies episode.
Is that the one where they did everything in black and white?
Not quite. They somehow come into possession of a movie studio, and each of the boys wanted to make a different sort of movie. So Bill wanted to make a black and white silent comedy, Graham wanted to make a western, and Tim Brooke Taylor wanted to make a epic Roman gladiator film.
That's right.
And they go out into the studio lot to film it, but they kept crossing over each other, and it is honestly the most wonderful piece of creative filmmaking I have ever seen. I know I can get that on, get a link to that on YouTube. I am definitely putting that on our Facebook page for people to look up. If you're not familiar with it, watch it. If you are familiar with it, you know you want to see it again.
And a great piece of stunt work where one of the building props falls down, and I think it's Bill's on the ground, and the window falls completely around him as it hits the ground. And you sort of go, that's inch by inch timing there.
Well, that's just it. It's a copy of a thing that Buster Keaton did back in the 20s, where he's standing there, the wall of the building falls down, and he happens to be standing where the window is. So they recreated that. And the wonderful thing is, after the building falls down and they end up standing in the window thing, they walk away, and you see a character that looks like Buster Keaton come up, look at it, grab out a notebook and pen and takes a note, and then runs off again.
Time travel, yes, it is possible. The Goodies were also twice nominated for the Best Light Entertainment Program at the BAFTA Awards in 1972 and 1976. I think they should have been nominated more often, but, you know.
Yeah, it's just us. Now, the show features extensive use of slapstick and often performed using sped-up photography and clever, through although low-budget, visual effects, such as when they built a railway station together and woke next morning to discover that the construction equipment outside, the steam shovel, bulldozer and backhoe, had all come to life and were lumbering, growling and battling like dinosaurs.
Is that the one where they found the T-Rex under the building?
No, I think it was a different one.
Oh, there's so many episodes.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Now, the characters from the series are based on the persona of the three guys, Graham being a bright but bizarre mad scientist, Tim being a conservative, vain, sexually repressed upper-class royalist, and Bill being a scruffy, occasionally violent, left-leaning rebel from Lancashire. The group have suggested that their characters of Graham, Tim and Bill represent the liberal, conservative and Labour wings of British politics, or the upper class, middle class and the working class stereotypes of the day.
The characters play up to their stereotypes, but are not necessarily based on the actor playing the character, even though the actors playing characters with their own names and had some minor characteristics in common. Now, in reality, Graham is a medical doctor, Tim is a lawyer who is not at all conservative, but he says, I have a double-barreled name, so I was always going to play the Tory. And Bill is actually a pacifist ornithologist and active environmentalist. The original BBC television series ran from November 1970 to February 1980 on the BBC Two. There were 69 episodes, mostly 30 minutes in length, except for two 45-minute episodes, the Christmas specials. They were called The Goodies and the Beanstalk and The Goodies Rule OK. It was one of the first shows in the UK to use chroma key and one of the first to use stop-motion techniques in a live-action format. Other effects include hand editing for repeated movement, mainly used to make animals talk or sing, and play speed effects to use, like they used in the episode Kitten Kong. Although the Goodies are well known for performing spectacular but comedic stunts, it was Tim who performed most of them.
He did seem to be the brunt a lot of the impact, didn't he?
Yes, I think the other two writing it for them that way.
Well, they were using his pen, so yeah. Mm. They also presented the Christmas 1976 edition of Disney Time from the toy department at Selfridge's store in London, broadcast on BBC One on Boxing Day at 5:50 p.m. That has to be precise.
Exactly.
Now, the Goodies never had a formal contract with the BBC, and when BBC Light Entertainment budget for 1980 was exhausted by the production of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they signed a contract with the London Weekend Television for ITV1. Are you following all this? I hope you are. There will be questions later. However, after a 1.5-hour Christmas special, Snow White 2 in 1981, and a 6-part series in 1982, the series was cancelled. In recent interviews, the cast suggested the reason for the cancellation was mainly economic. A typical Goody sketch was more expensive than it appeared to be. Because a lot of the stop-motion editing and all that sort of stuff does take time.
Time and money, yes.
Yeah. The Goody's humour earned it an unfair reputation as a children's program. I could never, ever think of the Goody's as being a children's program. I'm sorry.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Well, the Goody's was a consistently very popular show in the UK, because it seemed to appeal particularly to younger viewers, some critics dismissed it as juvenile in comparison to other contemporary alternative comedies, like Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah. Now, in fact, while the comparison irritated them, the boys were old university friends of the Monty Python cast, and they worked with them in the past, as we'd mentioned before. So there was a lot of mutual respect between the rival shows. Now, this led to some very gentle parodies of Monty Python appearing in the Goody's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Goody's episode in which Monty Python's Flying Circus are either parodied or alluded to include Goody's and the Beanstalk. At the end of the episode, John Cleese shows up as a genie in the guise of a Monty Python character and uses the Python catchphrase, "And now for something completely different." He's spotted and then told to push off by Tim, who shouts dismissively, "Kids program," before vanishing. Invasion of the Moon Creatures was another episode. The opening credits of Monty Python's Flying Circus can be seen when Graham switches on the television. Graham immediately switches off the television in disgust because he has missed what he wanted to see, a Moira Anderson show.
Mm-hmm.
In Fleet Street Goodies, in which the Liberty Bell March, the theme from Monty Python, can be heard, in the background. In Scatty Safari, there were four Gumbies featured in the show. Now, Gumbies, if you are a Monty Python fan, you know exactly who they are.
Gumboots and the hanky on their head, yeah.
In the Goody's Rule OK, two Gumbies, whom they address as John and Eric, can be seen on Skid Row.
Yeah, John Cleese and
Eric Idle.
Yeah.
You Friend or UFO is the episode name, where Bill plays a Python theme on the trombone with the aliens.
Now, this is the series that I loved, or the episode that I loved, was where they had an R2-D2 in there, being a Star Wars fan, and they called him Heebie-Jeebie. And he had vacuum cleaner attachments and everything on him, and I'm thinking, how on earth did they get away with doing that sort of thing? Copyright. Now, unlike most long-running BBC comedy series, The Goody's has not enjoyed extensive repeats on terrestrial television in the UK. In 1986, BBC Two broadcast the episode Kitten Kong during a week of programmes screened under the banner TV 50, when the BBC celebrated 50 years of broadcasting. In the late 1980s, the pan-European satellite channel Super Channel broadcast a couple of episodes, and the short-lived comedy channel broadcast some of the later Goody's episodes in the early 1990s. That was all over Europe. Later, UK Gold screened many of the earlier episodes, often with commercial timing cuts, and the same episodes subsequently aired on UK Arena, also cut and edited for commercials. Now, when UK Arena became UK Drama and later UK TV Drama, The Goody's was dropped along with other comedy and documentary shows. So it's really hard for The Goody's to get to air.
The cast finally took matters into their own hands and arranged with Network Video for the release of a digitally remastered Best Of selection. They called it The Goody's at Last. That was released in April 2003. The second volume, At Last, A Second Helping, was released in February 2005. Series 9, including the Christmas special, was released as The Goody's, The Complete LWT Series, London Weekly Times, 2007. The fourth volume, The Goody's, At Last Back for More, again was released in 2010, as well as a DVD box set containing all four volumes to celebrate 40 years of The Goody's. Now, in 2004, an episode of the BBC documentary series Comedy Connections was devoted to The Goody's.
Christmas 2005 saw a 90-minute Goody special, including a documentary about the series Return of The Goody's. Now, that was broadcast on BBC Two.
However, many clips of the series were shown rather than any full episode. So it was like a goodies clip show. Now, this special was repeated on BBC Two on the 13th of November 2010.
Early on in 2006, a single episode, Winter Olympics, was broadcast on BBC Two, but was not followed by any more.
So they don't seem to be running the complete goodies from beginning to end, do they?
Not in England.
No. In February 2007, the 1982 LWT series was repeated on pay TV channel Paramount.
In December 2010, BBC Two showed selected late-night repeats of the BBC series, which ran nightly from the 23rd to the 30th of December. This apparent gesture followed years of campaigning by the goodies that the show had not been repeated like every other BBC show, such as Dad's Army, Some Mothers Do Heaven, etc. They were shown late at night where they were unlikely to gain many new fans, although they did garner good ratings given their time slot. And the first six episodes were taken from the BBC's own master tapes, rather than the digital remasters, the rights to which are currently owned by Network Video.
Here's where it gets good, because in Australia, the series has had continual popularity. It was repeated through the 1970s and the 1980s by the ABC, although as the show was typically broadcast in the 25-minute 6pm children's time slot, portions had to be edited out. Like I said, I never think of it as being a kid's show. The LWT series was played once on 7 in the early 1980s, and the ABC screened BBC episodes, try saying that three times fast, again in the early 1990s, but skipped several stories due to either political correctness or due to the lack of colour prints at the time. Now, honestly, when you're watching a show that's as classic as The Goodies, I don't mind watching a black and white episode.
Yeah, unfortunately, the studio executives think it's going to be colour or it's just not going to be shown.
Yeah, I mean, what do they do when they get to the movies episode and everything goes black and white? Do they try and colour it in? I don't think so. The BBC episodes were heavily edited to allow time for TV commercials when they were repeated on Channel 10 in the early 90s, and then they moved to pay TV on the UK TV channel during the 1990s and the early 2000s, where they have been screened in full. Thank goodness for that.
On Monday, 26th of July 2010, the ABC Two digital channel commenced reruns of the series, commencing with Kitten Kong episode. The program aired at 8pm.
Now, if they're showing Kitten Kong, that would have to be the 1972 version, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just clarifying that. Mm-hmm. The Goodies DVDs are available in Australia under different titles to the UK releases. The Goodies Eight Delicious Episodes. The Goodies A Tasty Second Helping, and the final episodes, respectively. The Goodies DVDs are also available in a box set with the commemorative booklet, the Tasty Box, it's called. The collection contains the same 16 episodes as the original two DVD releases, but with additional material such as commentaries on several of the episodes, the original scripts, and a couple of other little tasty tidbits in there. Picture quality is, of course, greatly improved with the digital restoration techniques, and the episode Come Dancing, which was originally thought to have only survived in black and white, is presented in full colour.
Now, in Canada, the series was shown on the CBC National Network during the late 1970s and early 1980s in the traditional after-school time slot, later a Friday night 10pm time slot, and occasionally at midnight. Several episodes were also shown on the CTV television network and on TV Ontario.
Why do they do that? Why do they put shows on at midnight? Oh, I don't know. In Germany in 1972, German TV screened a 13-part variety show, Engelbert and the Young Generation, a co-production between the BBC and the German station ZDF. Now, in this, the goodies appeared in short 3 to 4 minute film sequences. The first six films were culled from the first and second series of the goodies. They included Pets, that was from Kitten Kong, Pop Culture from the Music Lovers, Keep Fit, which came from the Commonwealth Games, Post Office from Radio Goodies, Sleepwalking from the Snooze, and Factory Farm from Fresh Farm Goodies. That's where they had the chicken pies, wasn't it? And there were seven new film sequences called Good Deed Day, The Gym, The Country Code, Sweet Entertainers, Plum Pudding, Bodyguard, and Pan Grannies. There also featured intro sequences with the host Engelbert Humperdinck visiting the goodies at their office. The shows were dubbed in the German, and because the goodies part of the shows was more visual than dialogue-based, it translated well.
Five of these new films were also cut together with a new story involving the goodies filling out their tax evasion forms. As a special 25-minute goodies compilation episode, a collection of goodies, it was the first broadcast on BBC One at 8:15pm on the 24th of September 1972. Well, that covers the show. Now let's see what the boys have been up to since then.
Okay, we'll start off with Tim. Now, Tim Brooke-Taylor. Now, during the run of the goodies, Tim took part in a BBC radio series called Hello Cheeky, a bawdy stand-up comedy show which also starred Barry Cryer and John Junkin. The series transferred to television briefly, produced by the UK commercial franchise Yorkshire TV. He also appeared on television in British sitcoms, including You Must Be the Husband with Diane Keane, His and Hers with Madeline Smith, and Me and My Girl with Richard O'Sullivan. In 1971, he played the short, uncredited role of a computer scientist in the film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I've really got to go back and have a look at that again.
I'm going to have to go back and check that out again. I didn't know Tim was in Willy Wonka.
After the end of the goodies on UK television, Tim worked again with Graham and Bill in the animated television series Banana Man.
Oh, I love Banana Man.
In which Tim was the narrator as well as voicing characters of King Zorg of the Nerks, Eddie the Gent, Auntie, and Apple Man. He also lent his voice to the children's TV series Gideon. Tim appeared with Bill and Graham in the Amnesty International show A Poke in the Eye with a Sharp Stick. This is where they sung their hit song Funky Gibbon. It also appeared in the Amnesty International show The Secret Policeman's Other Ball, in the sketches called Top of the Form. He did that with John Cleese, Graham Chapman and John Bird, Rowan Atkinson and Griff Rhys-Jones, and Cha-Cha-Cha. He did that with John Cleese and Graham Chapman. All three also appeared on the Top of the Pops with their song Funky Gibbon. And in 1978, Tim appeared with Graham in the theatre production of The Unvarnished Truth, with Royce Royton and Joe Kendall. The plot is Tom and Annabelle are a reasonably happy married couple. One evening they have an argument as to who loves the other most. A rough and tumble ensues and Tom discovers to his horror that Annabelle is dead. So starts an evening of a black farce. The hysterical ending finds the stage littered with female corpses and frantic males.
Sounds like a night at my place.
Ooh!
Now, I've got to jump back to the Funky Gibbon for a few seconds.
Yeah.
There was a show, I don't know whether it was part of the series or not, where the guys just came on stage and sang, and they did all the songs off their album. I think it was called The Goodies Sing. Was that ever part of the series, or was that a special one-off show they did?
It might have been a special one-off, and I suspect it was a clips from Top of the Pops.
Aha.
Their appearances on that.
We must track that down and get that up on the Facebook page, because it's great to see the guys sing and get the audience involved and get them all going and flowing. Ah, it's just amazing. Other BBC radio programs in which Tim played a part included the self-styled antidote to panel games, I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, which started in 1972 and rhymes. And Tim and Graham still appear regularly on I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. That's right, a radio show that has been going for 41 years. 41 years of a radio show.
It is hysterical. It is brilliant.
How can they come up with new stuff all the time after 41 years? Look it up and you'll see, if you can find some of the recordings that have been issued, you'll have a great laugh when you listen to it. But 41 years, that has got to be a record.
It is wonderful stuff. We've got, I collect a lot of those episodes. It's a game show. It's like theatre sports for the radio. But they do things like one song to the tune of another, and radio charades, where they play charades, but it's done with words. It's very, very clever. Absolutely, grab it if you can. Look it up. You can find it online or your local ABC retailer.
And on the 18th of February 1981, Tim was subject to the Thames television show This Is Your Life, which always worries me when they do something in the middle of someone's life and they say, This is your life, and they hand them a book. You expect them to just go, and die on the spot, don't you?
Now, Graham was a regular team captain of the political satire game If I Ruled the World. Now, Tim appeared as a guest in one episode. This is another game show. Now, during one of the games called I Couldn't Disagree More, Jim proposed that it was high time that the Goodies episodes were repeated. Now, Graham was obliged by the rules of the game to rebut this statement, and he replied, I couldn't disagree more. It was time to repeat them 10, 15 years ago. Now, this was followed by uproarious applause from the studio audience.
I totally agree. In 2004, Tim and Graham were co-presenters on Channel 4's daytime game show Beat the Nation, in which they indulged their usual game show banter, but took the quiz itself very seriously. Tim also appeared on stage in Australia and England, usually as a middle-class Englishman. Around 1982, he branched out into pantomime and appeared as the Dame in Dick Whittington. He does a lot of female impersonations, doesn't he?
Yes.
He tends to put dresses on a lot. He's also the author and co-author of several humorous books based mainly around his radio and television work and the sports of golf and cricket. He also took part in the pro-celebrity golf television series opposite Bruce Forsyth. And Tim appeared on the premiere episode of the BBC golf-based game Full Swing.
Tim was appointed Officer of the Order of the British Empire, an OBE, in the 2011 Birthday Honours.
Oh, can you imagine? I mean, having seen the character in the shows and how much he coveted the OBE and everything, can you imagine Tim actually getting an OBE? You know, I mean, you'd want to be a fly on the wall in Her Majesty's room when he was presented, wouldn't you?
That'd be nice.
Ah, yes.
So let's see, Graham. What's he done since the Goodies?
Old Mutton Chops himself.
Graham Garden has had a successful stage career and has acted in several national theatre productions, as well as London's West End. He's also acted in several BBC Radio 4 comedy drama series, the television drama including Peak Practice and Holby City. Now, as we said before, Graham appeared with Tim Brooke Taylor in the theatre production of The Unvarnished Truth. Now, Graham wrote a play called The Pocket Orchestra, which ran in London from the 26th of April 2006 to the 20th of May 2006. Not a long run.
No, not really, no.
Graham appeared in the political sitcom Yes Minister in the role of Commander Forrest of the Special Branch in the episode called The Death List, as well as appearing as a television presenter in the Doctor in the House episode Doctor on the Box. Graham wrote for and appeared with Barry Cryer and Alison Steadman in the 1989 BBC radio comedy sketch show The Long Hot Satsuma. In 2001 and 2002, Graham wrote for and appeared in the BBC radio comedy sketch show The Right Time, along with Eleanor Bron, Paula Wilcox, Clive Swift, Roger Blake, and Neil Innes.
Graham also writes and directs for the corporate video company Video Arts, famous for its training films starring John Cleese. If you have never seen any of the John Cleese training films, look them up. They are brilliant and brilliantly funny. He particularly does things like teamwork and working with difficult people and complaints. You've got to see him.
They're wonderful. And he's brought in many of the great English comedians to appear in them. I remember Ronnie Corbett was in one. Ronnie Barker was in another. So definitely worth a look up. Video Arts.
YouTube.
Training films, yes. Graham is the chair of the spoof radio program Beat the Kids. He has also appeared on the UK version of the television series Whose Line Is It Anyway? Now, that has a very similar format to the American version with Drew Carey.
But the English version is superior, of course.
Mm. He was also the co-writer of the BBC Radio 4 comedy show Giles Wembley Hogs Goes Off.
I'm glad you said that.
Still confused. Might have to have a look for that one as well.
Yes. Graham is also the patron of the disability charity Enrich. That's E-N-R-Y-C-H, formerly the Ryder Cheshire Volunteers. The charity works to enable adults with a physical disability to enjoy culture, leisure, learning and sporting opportunities through partnership with volunteers. So he's not only a funny guy, he's got a heart as well.
Mm.
Graham has hosted the quiz show Tell the Truth and presented a series of history programs, A Sense of the Past for Yorkshire Television. Graham Garden's voice was featured in the irreverent animated comedy series about the horrific Bad London Comprehensive High School, Bromwell High,
beginning in 2006. In June of 2006, Graham became a panellist on the new BBC Radio 4 comedy quiz show, The Unbelievable Truth, which he co-devised, starring, among others, Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton.
In August 2006, Graham and Tim joined up to perform at the Edinburgh Fringe in a show that looked back with some nostalgia to their work with the Goodies and in light entertainment. He also appeared in the comedy quiz show QI in November 2006. He also played a minor role in the 2007 television adaptation of Agatha Christie's Nemesis.
He has been a busy man, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Graham has also appeared in two of the Big Finish Doctor Who audio dramas, playing a parodic character. Parodic?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Parodic character, okay. In Bang Bang A Boom, he plays Professor Fashbinder, a parody of Victor Berger in Space 1999. In Max Warp, he plays TV presenter Jeffrey Vantage, parodying Top Gear's presenter Jeremy Clarkson. Now, this episode broadcast on BBC Radio 7 on the 26th of October 2008. He also plays Abbot Thelonious, alias the Meddling Monk, in the Eighth Doctor audio play, The Book of Kells, in 2010, and subsequently returns as the reoccurring antagonist to the Eighth Doctor.
I got to look those up again, because I do like the Big Finish audio productions of the Doctor Who plays too.
Yeah, it's interesting that you, I mean, Graham's obviously been so involved in so much of that culture over the years that some people wouldn't even know. I mean, I know heaps of Doctor Who fans that wouldn't be Goodies fans, but when they think of Graham Garden, well, you never know.
Yeah. Now, let's see, Graham was appointed the Officer of the Order of the British Empire, OBE, in the 2011 Birthday Honours for Services to Light Entertainment.
Now, that's the same year that Tim got his, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, so they would have been in the same room at the same time. Oh, that would have been so good. Get the camera out.
In 2012, he appeared on the Australian television version of The Unbelievable Truth. That's with the Chaser guys.
Oh, yes, yes. Now, we've done Tim. We've looked at Graham. It's time for William.
Little Bill.
Little Bill. Little Billy. Ah, Billy. My mate Bill.
Bill's first published work was an article about the bird life of Birmingham's Bartley Reservoir in the West Midland Bird Club's 1962 annual report. He has since written a number of books about birds and bird watching, as well as articles for many specialist publications, including British Birds, Bird Watching Magazine, and Birdwatch.
So he's a bit of a bird brain.
You think so?
He is, yes. One of Bill's first forays into the world of television natural history was on the 30th of July 1985 as the subject of a 50-minute Nature Watch special, Bill Oddie, Birdwatcher, in which he was interviewed by Julian Pettifer at places where he had spent time birding, including the Bartley Reservoir, the Christopher Cadbury Wetland Reserve at Upton Warren, and the RSPB Titchwell Marsh and Blackenley Point.
Only England could have place names like that.
Oh, that's a mouthful, I tell you. How many times has he said that?
Now, Bill has since hosted 23 successful nature programs for the BBC. On its first evening of broadcast in 2004, Britain Goes Wild set a record for its time slot of 8 p.m. on BBC Two. He got 3.4 million viewers.
Wow.
That's 1 million more than the Channel 4 program showing at the time. Now, Britain Goes Wild, renamed Spring Watch, the following year, became a wildlife broadcasting phenomenon, attracting up to 5 million viewers.
Well, you see, I think it may have been that they heard Bill Oddie and birds, and they were thinking something completely different.
Could have been. He became president of the West Midland Bird Club in 1999, having been vice president since 91. He is a former member of the council of the RSPB. Bill is also a vice president of the League Against Cruel Sports and vice president of the British Trust for Conservation Volunteers. He has practiced as a bird ringer, but allowed his license to lapse. Now, a bird ringer, or bird branding, is a technique used in the study of wild birds by attaching a small, individually numbered metal or plastic tag to a bird's leg or his wings.
Ah,
so right. That way, various aspects of the bird's life can be studied.
Yeah, so they can look at migration and mating habits and food. And yeah.
Well, bird ringer.
Yeah.
See, this show's also educational.
You're learning something. There you go. In 2003, Bill set up a half marathon to raise money for various wildlife charities in his birth town of Rochdale. And 2011, Bill featured as an investigator in Snares Uncovered, Killers in the Countryside. The film carried out an expose of snaring in Scotland and was commissioned by animal protection charity One Kind. During the investigation, Bill discovered 70 snare traps and several sink pits. Disgusting.
Incredible. Now, let's look at his music.
Yeah, he's written a lot of music.
Absolutely. In the 1960s and early 70s, Bill released a number of singles and at least one album. One of the singles issued in 1970 was On Ilika Morbasa. Sounds like it's Klingon, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
Performed in the style of Joe Cocker's With a Little Help from My Friends.
Oh, so that's a parody. This is the parody ones we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. The B-side was Hare Krishna, featured the Hare Krishna chant substituting the names of contemporary famous people called Harry, including Harry Secombe, Harry Worth, Harry Lauder, Harry Corbett, as well as puns such as Harry Along Now and Harry Stottle.
Now, he wrote a lot of stuff, but he was also a very accomplished musician himself. He played the drums and the saxophone and appeared as Cousin Kevin in a production of The Who's rock opera Tommy at the Rainbow Theatre in Finsbury Park. That was on the 9th of December in 1972. He also contributed vocals to Rick Wakeman's album Criminal Records. I think he also played guitar as well.
Could have done.
Yeah, he's very good.
Bill took part in the English National Opera production of the Gilbert and Sullivan comic opera The Mikado, in which he appeared in the role of the Lord High Executioner. He took over the role from Eric Idle. During the 1990s, Bill was a DJ for London-based jazz radio station 102.2 Jazz FM, but was dismissed after criticising the management on air after they told him he was playing too much jazz on his show.
It was a jazz show, wasn't it?
Yes, it's a jazz radio station, and he was dismissed because he was told he was playing too much jazz on his show.
102 FM Jazz, not all the time, but just when we feel like it.
Yeah, now here's some heavy metal.
Now, in 2007, Bill appeared on the BBC series Play It Again. In the episode, he attempts to realise his dream of becoming a rock guitarist. Initially, teacher Bridget Myrmikidis tries to teach him using traditional methods, but he rebels, of course, because he's Bill. Instead, he turns to old friend Albert Lee, Davies of the Kinks, and Mark Knopfler for advice, and strikes out on his own. He succeeds in the target of playing lead guitar for his daughter Rosie's band on her 21st birthday party and even manages to impress his erstwhile teacher. Go back, look it up, Play It Again, 2007. Bill Oddie playing guitar, strumming it out.
Now, in 2010, he agreed, along with fellow members of the Goodies, to release their 1970s hit, The Funky Gibbon, to raise funds for the International Primate Protection League's Save the Gibbon appeal.
On you, Bill.
Yeah. Bill appeared as the hapless window cleaner in Eric Sykes' comedy The Plank in 1967, and also presented the live children's Saturday morning entertainment show Saturday Banana during the late 1970s. In the late 1980s, he was the presenter of the BBC TV show Faux, a show about facts.
And in the 1990s, he became better known as the presenter of birdwatching and later wildlife-related programs such as Spring Watch, although he remains almost unknown to US audiences. In 1992, he was guest star in the US comedy television series Married with Children for the three-part episode set in England.
There's another thing I've got to look up.
Yeah, he's done so much, hasn't he?
Yeah. In 1997 and 98, he appeared on the Channel 4 TV program Time Team as the team excavated a Roman villa.
Those Romans get around, don't they?
Mm. He was the compere of the daytime BBC game show History Hunt in 2003 and has appeared in the Doctor Who audio drama Doctor Who and the Pirates. In 2004, he appeared in the BBC show Who Do You Think You Are, in which he looked into his ancestry. Now, he turned out to be visibly moved by all the show's revelations. In 2005, he took part in Rolf on Art. In September of that year, he was also a celebrity guest along with Linda Bellingham in the ITV1 program Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
In 2006, Bill appeared on the BBC show Nevermind the Buzzcocks and also appeared on the topical quiz show 8 out of 10 Cats. I wonder if they were Schrodinger cats. Anyway, Bill also is the voice behind many B&Q adverts. B&Q is a UK thing. Look it up. Throughout 2006 and 2007. On the 25th of May 2007, Bill made a cameo appearance in Ronnie Anaconda's new comedy sketch show, Ronnie Anaconda and Co. He hosted the genealogically based series My Famous Family, broadcast on UK TV History Channel in 2007. And in 2008, Bill was guest on Jamie Oliver's television special, Jamie's Foul Dinners, talking about free-range chickens, not how foul Jamie's cooking is.
Now, Bill undertook an Australian tour during 2013. All of the mainland capital cities, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, and a series of one-off shows, an oldie but a goodie. During the performances, a video message was shown from Timbrook Taylor and Graham Garden. He made personal appearances on both The Project and Adam Hill's Tonight TV programs during the tour.
In 2001, Bill became the third person to decline to appear on This Is Your Life, because he didn't want them to hand him a book and he'd just die on the spot. He changed his mind a few hours later and actually appeared on the show.
On the 16th of October 2003, Bill was made an OBE for his services to wildlife conservation and a ceremony at Buckingham Palace. He played down the event, choosing to wear a camouflage shirt and crumpled jacket to receive the medal.
That sounds so Bill. In June 2004, Bill and Johnny Morris were jointly profiled in the first of a three-part BBC Two series, The Way We Went Wild, about television wildlife presenters. In May 2005, he received the British Naturalist Association Peter Scott Memorial Award from B&A President David Bellamy, in his recognition for his great contribution to our understanding of natural history and conservation.
Excellent.
David Bellamy. Impression.
Very badly as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the tour that the boys did in 2005.
Ah, I missed it.
I was there.
Oh, you lucky son.
Oh, look up on our Facebook page. I'll put up a cover, a photo of the cover of the program from the night.
The one that you've got signed by everybody.
I didn't get them signed, unfortunately.
Ah,
missed out on that one. Yeah, you see, what happened was the trio reunited in Australia for The Goodies Still Alive and on Stage as part of Sydney's Big Laugh Comedy Festival in March of 2005. The show toured the country, visiting Melbourne, Brisbane, Canberra, and selling out most of the 13 performances. Before the shows, the boys had hinted in press interviews that the tandem bike might make an appearance. Now, what they actually did, they made their entrance on stage in a walking frame made for three. They lost control and crashed off stage into the wings. It was hysterical. It was wonderful. A further Australian tour by the Goodies without Bill took place during November and December of 2005. Now, what happened was Timbrook Taylor and Graham Garden took their Goodies live show to the 2006 Edinburgh Fringe Festival. The show was similar to the second leg of the Goodies Australian tour, with Bill participating via video. This is due to his filming commitments. The show was also performed at the Paramount Comedy Festival in Brighton in 2006.
Now, Tim and Graham performed in the show at 22 further UK venues in 2007. Tim and Graham also appeared at Sydney's Riverside Theatre Parramatta on the 15th of October 2009 and the World's Funniest Island Comedy Festival on Cockatoo Island, Sydney Harbour on the 17th and 18th of October 2009. The show was hosted by Andrew Hansen of the Australian comedy team The Chaser.
Now let's see, the Goodies were once again reunited when the BBC One show, entitled The One Show, brought them back on the 4th of November 2010. It concluded with Tim riding a tandem alone while the others stared and watched.
How can you ride a tandem alone?
Not easy.
Especially from the back seat. It's really hard. During the 1970s, Core comic, released by Fleetway Publications, had a Goodies comic strip. When the comic later merged with Buster, the Goodies didn't move across, although the TV show was still running. Wonder why they do that.
Yeah. There's an American trio called Stella. They had a show on the Comedy Central that was very similar to the Goodies in terms of basic plotline. The trio even riding a trandem. The television series premiered in the United States in 2005.
We're going to have to look that one up, I think, Mike.
Yeah, hopefully.
The Goodies rip-off show.
Australian rock band Spiderbait released their 1993 album that had a rocked-up fast cover version of the Goodies song Run.
The US rock band The White Stripes named their sixth album Icky Thump in reference to the Goodies sketch The Battle of Icky Thump. The name was changed from Icky Thump to Icky Thump to make the title more palatable to an American teenage audience. Like the American teenagers know anything about palate. Apologies to all the American teenagers out there listening. We love you all.
So, with Tim at the age of 73, Bill, 72, and Graham, a very young 70, all three Goodies are going strong.
Tim and Graham with their regular TV and radio appearances, and Bill with his many nature documentaries, these three are still entertaining and educating us.
And don't we love it?
Oh, we do. The Goodies, all three of them.
Yeah.
I always pictured Graham as being the oldest, but there you go.
Youngest. Now, we've got to make a move because it's a marathon episode, this one.
Oh, it's been huge. Now, remember, guys, link us in with Facebook, and you can also find us in, where is other places? No.
Yeah. Facebook is the quickest place.
Yep. Go to Facebook. Check us out there. We're going to put up some links to some of the video clips that we've been talking about. And please like the page, leave us your comments, and please make suggestions about shows that you'd like to hear in the future, because we'd love to hear from you. And we've had guys from all over the world coming back to us with suggestions of things they'd like to hear. So let us know.
And we will be a lot more regular in our episodes coming up very soon.
Yes, Mike's been taking his daily dose of brand, so we plan to be a lot more regular now.
There you go.
Please, ever, anyone?
If you download us on iTunes, refer us to your friends, like us, give us a review. Spread the word. Let everyone know you're listening, and we will catch up with you again very, very soon.
We will. You've been listening to Historical Hystericals with Chris Brennan
and Commander Mike.
Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll be back again.
Have fun.
That's a threat, not a promise.